Part two of a three-part series. We're doing it in chronological order. First Shiduchim. I said it the wrong way around. This is the wrong way around. First Shiduchim, and then Shalom Bayis, and then Be'ez Hashem next week we'll do on Chinuch, education of children. So Shalom Bayis seems like it should be the obvious thing that comes next, but it's not so obvious. People just kind of go into marriage assuming that things can work out, and whereas when you take a license to drive a car, as a theory and as a practice, and there's a lot that goes into it. With Shalom Bayis, many people don't do that. They just get married and kind of hope it'll work out. And when they look at the model of their parents, they often have tainas. Often people have tainas, like, I don't want to be exactly like my parents, but there's a good chance that if you don't actively work on it, then some things will be repeated. Because that's the model that you know. You don't know another model. Unless you've actively thought it through. You've thought, what I want to be like, what do I want to take from my parents home, what I don't want to take from my parents home, and then you've thought about the model that you wish your home to be. Otherwise, the default will be for better or for worse. Could be fine, could not be fine. Even if it's fine, it could be better, right? Because it's not going to be the same as your parents, because she's also bringing the model of her home into the family. So this is something which certainly, certainly needs effort. And what's ironic is that if a person would start learning Maseches Kiddushin or Maseches Ksuvos, they would know you can't just like float through the Masechta, you know? They know they have to do Chazara, and they have to look up Iyunim, and you have to have good questions and good answers, and you have to understand in depth. No one would dream of just learning in Yeshiva during an Iyun Seder, like a very superficial, just like going into the Masechta in the middle of a flow of an Iyun Sug without knowing what's flying, because you're learning Maseches Nashim, right? And everyone knows that Nashim and Nezikin are two of the most yeshivish ones, which is why in Camp Yavin we're doing Shviyas and Psochem and other things. But everyone knows that Nashim is like one of the most intense ones. Next year, Bezer Hashem, one of the three hardest Masechtas, right? And the hardest of all the Nashim, we're doing Yevamos. Everyone knows that if you take the sugya very seriously, prepare for it. When it comes to Shalom Bayis, people, and also Chinuch of children, even more so Chinuch of children, people often presume it just kind of will work out. And when it doesn't, then Chas v'Shalom, they turn to blaming. Right, what went wrong? If she would have done this, if she would have done that. And that's the worst possible thing that could happen. So our goal today is two parts. A minor part is one or two skills or habits, healthy habits or techniques, if you like, of healthy Shalom Bayis. That's a minor part. Because those types of things you can read elsewhere. You can get guidelines and read elsewhere. What I want to also provide here, which is something that you won't read elsewhere, I mean, unless you're reading something which is very specifically about this topic from a Torah perspective, is the Torah view on Shalom Bayis. Meaning there are many good books out there that speak about how to have marital harmony and to have good communication skills that you can certainly find. But when it comes to why is it like that? Why are women like that? What's the purpose? Why did Hashem make it like that? That you won't find it. And therefore, if you buy one of these books that gives you good guidance on communication skills, then you'll say, well, since my wife is just not able to speak like I do, and she doesn't think like I do, then you have to communicate with her a certain way. Fine, I have to read all these books. And then it feels like a chore. It feels like a task that you have to work through. It feels like a burden. And even if you're willing to do it, because you're right, that's what part of marriage is made up of, you're willing to do it. But at the same time, why do you have to do it? Right? Why can't a woman just be more like a man and everything will be fine? Like, it will be much more straightforward and simple. So I want to start with an interesting Gemara. So the major question we're discussing today is, what's the purpose of marriage? And without understanding, then we'll hopefully get back and understand the real key to Shalom Bayis. I want to start with the Gemara because there's a very famous non-Jewish book, which is probably the most quoted and most recommended book to read on Shalom Bayis. And the source of it is actually from Maseches, not source, but the same underlying idea. Obviously, this non-Jewish book develops it much further than what this one quote. But this is a source in Chazal, a good 1,700 years ago, which precedes that idea. And just to show that the source of the concept it emanates in Chazal. So Maseches Shabbos, Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph, the Mishnah says, Lo teitzei isha b'machat nekuva v'lo b'taba'at sheyesh aleha chotam. A woman's not allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a signature ring, a ring that has a stamp on it. It says the Gemara, Amar Ula v'chilufehen be'ish, and all the things that it says that a woman can't go out with, the opposite applies to a man. Alma kasavar Ula kol midi dechazil ish, lo chazil isha. what you see from here is that whatever's fitting for a woman is not fitting for a man, meaning the opposite would apply. A man does, it is normal for a man to have a stamp on his ring, so he can go out with that on Shabbos. It's not normal for a woman to, so she can't go out with that on Shabbos. So Ula says, the opposite is now, you see Ula holds, that whatever's fitting for a man is the opposite of a woman. Ask the Gemara, Meitei Rav Yosef, Ro'im Yotzin Besakin, V'lo Ro'im Bilvad Amru, Ela Kol Adam. So the Gemara says, shepherds go out in a certain sackcloth, certain garment, and the Gemara says, and since they do that, so everyone can do it as well. And here there's a stirah. Because if Rav Yosef says that once one part of the population wears something which is normal for them to wear, then everyone can go out with it on Shabbos, it's not considered carrying, then when a woman goes out with it, when a man goes out with a certain ring, then why can't a woman go out with it? Right, it should be the same principle. Once a certain part of the population goes out with a certain thing, then everyone should be able to. Answers Ula, and this is Paskin and Halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. Kasavar Ula, Nashim Am Bifnei Atzmanhein. You hear that? Women aren't a part of the population. They're a different nation. They're a different nation. I mean, that which it's said by shepherds, that as long as part of the nation do something, then it's considered normal for people to do. What's normal for men to do is not normal for women. What's normal for women is not normal for men, and it doesn't carry across. It's built into the system, built in. And this is quite different to what modern society is trying to push. Right? But what's built into the system is that men and women are inherently different. It's inherent. There are times where there's a lot of overlap. There are individuals who seem to be on the wrong side. But overall, there's an innate way that men are built and an innate way that women are built. And when we're speaking about Shalom Bayit, we're trying to understand these two nations which speak different languages, have different mindsets, they have to be bonding, they have to be connecting. This is the Torah's obligation for us to do this. The Torah designed, it's not a mistake, it's the Torah's design. And our goal here is trying to understand how they're supposed to connect. That's question number one, that non-Jews deal with as well. But then also we're going to go a little deeper and say why they have to connect. And that will be more of a Torah concept. So far, so good. Whenever you're ready to bring out the water, I think people will appreciate it.
What's the name of that book?
The Englishman?
Yeah.
Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Or, Am Bifnei Atzmanhein. That's the same underlying concept. So, there's another good book I want to recommend. And hopefully I'll throw out a couple of names also. Also, not a Jewish book, but the concepts there are very valuable, which is enabling you to understand in more depth how to relate to another person, which is called The Five Languages of Love. And those are two books that I'm recommending, not Jewish books, each of them, but they're the same concept, not really. Okay. The goal of the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, is to teach you very thoroughly that men and women work in different ways and to highlight the differences. From that book, you get a really good understanding of the way women think, and hopefully if they read it, they get an understanding of how you think, and it's amazing to find yourself mirrored in that book. And here you think you're so unique, you know, and there you are. All men are pretty much the same. You're in that book, you're pretty much the same, and so is it for women. But what that book, as I said, leaves you with is, but why is it like that? That doesn't answer that question. He's from a scientific point of view, or a research point of view, discovering the differences, but not coming to describe why it's like that. Now the book, The Five Languages of Love, is a crucial message behind it, and I'll just describe very, very briefly what his thesis is. We're going to see in a minute the Rambam. Let's start with the Rambam, actually, and then we'll go from there. What do I have to do? There's a code?
Is there one?
It's coming. Yeah. You'll appreciate it so much more. So, the Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, Perek Tedvav at the end, says, an instruction for a man and an instruction for a woman. V'chein tzivu chachamim, shiya adam mechabedet ishto yoter migufo, v'ohava kegufo, ואם יש לו ממון מרבה בטובתה כפי ממונו, ולא יציר עליה אימא יתרה, ויהיה דיבורו אימא בנחס, ולא יעצב, עצב ולא רגזן. The Rambam's instruction for Shalom Bayis. The Chachamim instructed that a man should honor his wife more than himself. That's very interesting. It's a different gear since I read this originally. Which edition of the Rambam is this? Is it Frankel Rambam?
I'm sorry, yeah.
Okay, because there's a different gears, which is all the difference of the dig that I want to make. So,
as far as you can see, the different gears.
Oh, really? Okay. So I'll do the general thing, and then we'll go into it in a sec. So honor her more than yourself. Love her as yourself. If you have money, then you should use your money to benefit her. Meaning, in other words, if you have a choice between spending on what you think is important or what she thinks is important, the instruction of the Rambam is to go with her. Don't be overly bearing. Ema yetera. And when you speak, speak in a gentle way. Don't be depressed around her and not angry around her. That's the key to success of the Rambam. I'm not going to go into all of these now. We're going to take a theme. Then it continues and it says, V'chein tzivu al ha'isha she'tzia mechabedet et ba'ala b'yoter midai. She has to honor her husband even more than she thinks necessary. V'ya'aleh amora memenu, and she acts in a way of having awe from him. V'taseh kol ma'aseh al piv. And it carries on. V'yeh be'ineha k'mo sar o melech. And he should be in her eyes like a prince, like a king. And then it carries on. So what's really unfortunate is when the couple come for Shalom Bayis to the rabbi, and the wife says, Rabbi, it says here mefurash, he has to honor her even more than himself and love her and give her money and not put fear. And he's not doing it. She says, excuse me, give me that. One second. Says here, he should treat her as a king. She should see him as a king and she should honor him. Your term with that. And the rabbi says, whoa. You're each reading the wrong section. That's where the problem is starting. If you're always demanding your rights, then it becomes a conflict of interests. Why isn't she giving me what I want? But if you're giving and answering her needs, even if she's not giving you your needs, then it becomes a mutual respect relationship. Where instead of each fighting to get what they want, then it becomes against each other. You're working together where each is providing for the other. That's a beautiful insight. Now the diuk in the Rambam, wait, what do? You press here? Well, I'll just say it and you can look it up afterwards in the Frankel. It's good. Okay. Now there's a deal here which has been made which is very interesting. It doesn't say V'chein tzivu chachamim lechabedet ishto. It doesn't say that. It says V'chein tzivu chachamim shiyeh adam mechabedet ishto. What's the difference in the Rambam? No, thank you. In adding those two extra words. What's the difference between v'chein tzivu chachamim shechabed et ishto or sheye adam mechabed et ishto? You see the diyuk there? What's the diyuk? Can you tell?
Internalizing.
Go on, explain.
As opposed to just more on a non-behavioral level, like internalizing.
Whoa. That's huge, what you just said. One level of honoring is honoring where this person needs something. It's their issue. But beseder, that's what they need, I'll give it to them. And then it comes from an external place. It's what do they need, I'll do it for them, that's okay. There's another level where it transforms you into being a being whose role is to do that. It's not so much about the actions, it's more about the state of being that you're in. Well, the Rambam's formula for success of Shalom Bayit is not techniques. Right? And you're going to hear, I'm going to give one or two techniques just because they work. Right, but our goal is not what technique can I use that will make my wife happy and then I can carry on with my life. And that's my goal, really, is to go with my life. What does she need? I'll make it. No, she's probably listening. Okay, I'll do my best. If it's authentic, it's not a problem, right? If it's fake, it's a problem. If it's all about techniques, it's a problem, right? If you're trying to win her over, that's a problem. But if it's, like the Rambam says, Shiyeh Adam Mechabed, you should be a person who is Mechabed, then it's a transformative. It's not just about what does it take to make her happy? It's about, I wish to be in a state of making happy. Now, thank you very much. Now, this book, The Five Languages of Love, its goal is to show you that if you really wish to honor someone, not in a technique, but in an authentic manner, that it's not sufficient to see what do I want and then give that to them. Like, have you been bowling? What size bowling ball do you use?
14.
So let's say... Is that a big one?
It's on the bigger side.
So let's say you have a frail, fragile wife. And you want to buy her a birthday present. And you've got really into bowling recently. And you've been thinking that it's not enough just to pick up the bowling balls from the alley every time you go there. But you want to have your own one. So you go to the store and you have engraved on the ball the word David. Right? And it's size 14. And you come back to your wife and you say, darling, I've bought you a birthday present. Here you go, and you give her the ball. She's looking at it, she's thinking, I know this is what you would like, but you have no clue where I'm holding. or what is important to me. And that's what we often do, in a more subtle way, in a much more subtle way. There are five languages of love, which obviously people are complex. It's not like you're only one and expensive the other. But nevertheless, you will find that you have one language of love, which is your primary one. And it's very important both for you to know what yours is and for you to learn what hers is. You don't have to be too much of a chacham to discover it, because it's only one woman you ever have to discover. Now, you don't have to do a whole research and understanding many, many people. And once you know the five categories, it should be relatively easy to discover it. I want to go through the five. And remember this, because this is something which could serve you in good case. I just want to say, on a personal note, that once I read this book, I started paying attention more to my children. And I noticed that of the first three children, three different languages. It was fascinating. Meaning the way they wish to be respected, and the way they both give love and want to receive love. For my first three children, it's three different ways. I was blown away. And only when you have the chiluk in your mind, you're able to start identifying it in different people. And now that I know that, with those three older children, I can really give them back affection and love as a parent in a way that they will hear it. And not in my way. Because my way is a certain way, but it's not their way, they're not going to hear it. It's not going to help anything. If you really wish to be with them, you have to understand their language of love. Right? It's obvious, right? So one language of love is quality time. Women are queens of that one. Having quality time together. It's not just women, men as well. But quality time is where you're not just coming home. From your perspective, you're happy just to open the paper. Yeah? And see what happened in the day. Or open the Daf Yomi. From your perspective, you don't need the interaction. You don't need it. Right? It's enough for you to say, good morning, good night, how are you? That you're fine, you're satisfied. But you come home and she has a need for quality time. She spent the whole day waiting for you. Even though she's done many, many other things. But she's been waiting for this moment where she can come down in, back in the evening and sit together and share her day. Her primary language of love may be quality time. And even if you have a different language of love, which we'll give a few examples in the middle, which are more man ones, right? But if you're not giving her that one, then she's not going to feel loved. And let's move on to a second one just to give the contrast. Let's say your language of love is giving. That's more of a manly one. Like giving things. You give her presents, or you work, and you see the fact that you work as a way of giving to her. Because I'm working to earn money so that you can buy what you want. So he says to her, she says, you don't love me. He says, what do you mean I don't love you? I let you buy that clothing that you wanted last week. You let me buy clothing? He says, what do you mean? I worked hard and I earned money, and I said, you can go buy what you want. She says, yeah, but you don't love me. He says, I don't love you. I bought flowers for Shabbos last week. I don't like flowers. I bought them just for you. So don't you see I love you? He says, yeah, but when I want to spend time, I don't have time. But okay, but I'm learning Daf Yomi and I have business meetings and everything. What else do you want? More jewelry? I'll buy you jewelry. Now what? So it's clear they're speaking very different languages. But from his perspective, it's being authentic. He wants for his birthday a gift. That's what he wants. If she would say, let's go for a long walk together and we can talk all the way from our childhood until today. I have so much to share with you. But that's torture. It's not quality time. But in her expression, that's the biggest birthday gift she could give him, because it's giving real, authentic quality time together. So those are two different languages of love. A third language of love is touch. And that's very personal. And that's more of a conversation once you're already married or when you're just about to get married. But that's another language of love, which for some people is a primary language. Another language of love is acts of service. She makes you a meal. And she loves making you a meal. Like, she wants to make you a meal. Like, for her, it's not a gift. It's about being involved in something on your behalf. And she may ask you in the evening, could you make me a drink, a hot drink? Could you make me a coffee? And for her, that's, do you love me? This is the test. Because for her, the act of service that you're doing for her now, that she's requested, is her way of asking for love. And if you say no, you're saying, I don't love you. And even though in your opinion, you've given her love endlessly bound, and the last one is words of praise or encouragement or compliments. That's the last one. Now, those five languages, you'll discover them within your wife, and you'll discover them in your children. Obviously, everyone likes all of them. Right? They're all positive. But some don't really speak to people so much. Some, like, for example, the gifts doesn't speak to everyone. Not everyone likes gift or need. Everyone likes a gift, but not everyone needs a gift as a way of expression of love. That's not a primary one by everyone. Everyone likes compliments, but not everyone needs to hear the compliment to feel their worth. If they hear it and it's said appropriately, it could be very nice, but it's not the defining factor of do you love me. So really honoring, being in a state of honoring your wife is not about finding what technique it is that, and I'll say the right thing and I'll press her button and she'll be happy. But it's about authentically getting into her mindset and being in a state of giving to her what her authentic need is. Those are the five languages of it. It's crucial to know them and then to tune into what your wife's one is. Okay, let's take it a step further. True story happens every day in every family. The wife comes home and she's been out trying to get some form filled in the bank. And the husband wants to know if she got it signed, right? Because, like, you know, their mortgage depends on this, let's say, right? So it's some mortgage form and their mortgage depends on it, and she went to the... So he comes home and she says, you know, I went to the bank today. Oh, did you get it signed? Well, first of all, I was about to leave and the baby started crying. There you go, yeah? Make it real. Interactive. So here I thought I was going to go and then the baby starts crying. But just wait. Did you get the form signed? She says, wait, I'm telling you. I'm telling you something else, but I'm getting there. Okay, so there's about, you know, 4, 5, 6 minutes about the baby. I'm going to spare you, but you're going to have a lot of it in the future. And then, I go to get the bus, because you took the car. So I go to get the bus. And you know, they didn't update the website. And it said that it was supposed to be this bus, and it was another bus, and the people told me it was going to be this one, and then I wasn't sure what to do. I tried calling you, but of course you didn't answer. I'm listening, but... Did you get this form signed? I'm getting there. Wait, listen. The kids said there's a whole story on the bus and who she met and didn't meet, and she thought it was supposed to speak to her and didn't speak to her, and there's a whole story there. And then she gets to the bus and the air conditioning was working, it wasn't working, how long the line was, how long the line wasn't. Where there is a rule that if the baby's crying, you're allowed to skip lines. There's not a rule like that, and how other people were arguing about something else and it wasn't nice to be there. V'chule. 15 minutes. So there's tongue hanging out. Did you get it signed or not? And every time he says that, she gets offended. Why are you offended? You're telling me about where you got the form signed. Was it signed or wasn't it signed? Just tell me. Don't you know how to talk? Wait, that was rude. Sorry, I'm sorry. I'm trying not to be rude. But can you tell me? She gets really frustrated. And at the end, the way the conversation ends is, okay, I got it signed. Is that what you want to hear? Fine. And he doesn't understand what was wrong in that conversation. What went wrong with it? But listen very carefully, this is huge. Men and women have very different needs in marriage. They come into marriage from different sides and they have different needs. And whilst he's looking for his need to be fulfilled, and she's looking for her need to be fulfilled, if they don't understand that they're working on different ends of the spectrum, then there's going to be a constant clash. And it's not a clash between, you know, Baruch and Feiki. It's a clash between man and woman. Olam b'fnei atzmane. They're a different world. It's a different world. They think differently. The woman's need in the marriage is empathy, encouragement, understanding, to be a partner, that we're together, that everything we do on the same page together. And her way of expressing that is by sharing everything that's happening, minute details, so that you're together. How else are you going to be together? You have to be together on every fine detail, and then you're together. So for her, it's not about the money and the bank. That's irrelevant. That's just the hechi timtze of talking. And women find every hechi timtze to talk. It's a hechi timtze. I want to share with you something. This is what I can share. Let me talk. Now, when he says to her, "Did you get the money? Did you get the form signed?" What's he essentially saying? I don't care about you. I care about money. He doesn't mean that. He really, really doesn't mean that. And if it would be in those terms, chas v'shalom, he would never say in his life. And if he would hear this story and he would be sensitive to this concept, he would stop doing it immediately. Right? Once he's aware of it, then he would never do it again. He would be patient and listen. But men aren't patient to listen. And then he's not aware of this concept. And therefore, he's thinking to himself, she's come to tell me something very solution-orientated. We need the mortgage signed. Was it signed? A man's way of thinking is, there's a problem, I'll fix it. Tell me what the issue is, I can solve it. What's your problem? Just speak. Oh, okay, fine, I know how to do that, don't worry. No. Now, listen carefully. Why doesn't she tell him at the beginning? Because she's clever. And she knows. She's not sadistic, yeah? If she knows, if she would tell him at the beginning, the rest of the conversation would be like this. He's with his newspaper. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I'm listening. Mm-hmm. What? Since I always said last week, yeah. He's not interested, because he's really not interested. Because he wanted to know, was the form signed? Because the money is important to him. And she is important to him, but you don't need to listen to every detail in order to express importance. But for her, you do. And for her, that's the way of expressing it. So a woman is, she's in survival mode, really. Like, if you're not going to listen to when I share with you, I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. I'll hold you out there with the bait that I have, that you want to know the final what happened at the end. And then I can share. And you'll miss it because you have to, because you need to know what happened at the end. She's doing it from a healthy place. She's doing it because she's aware deeply of what her needs are. She's not conscious of the fact that she's doing that. She's not doing it intentionally. But she's deeply aware. That's her need. That's what she comes to the marriage for. And if it's not being expressed, then she'll fight for it. She has to have it. When a man becomes more aware of what marriage is about and how it works, then he can be sensitive to that and it won't be frustrating to him. Okay, so we've spoken a couple of points about, I'd say more just understandings of the difference between men and women. We saw based on the Rambam that should be your default state of being in a state of being mechabed. It's not just if you need to, you'll do it, but it's your essence. We've seen that it's built into the system that women are a different nation. And we saw five different ways of tuning into what your language of love is so that you can express that to her. And also then obviously tuning into her language of love so that you can. Now, we could go on from here about communication skills. And there's a lot of value in doing that. But that's something which I hope and I imagine you'll be sensitive enough to pick up along the way. What I want to go on to now is, why did Hashem design it in this way? Why is it that women are different from men? That you won't find in the secular literature. Why did Hashem design it in such a way that there's this inherent built-in difference? The Rambam writes a halacha in Hilchos Chanukah. Ner ishu beito. When you have a choice of Hilchos Chanukah or Shabbos candles, when you have a choice of Shabbos candles or Kiddush, what comes first? Shabbos candles always come first. Now the first one is okay, it's very quite logical. Meaning, Hanukkah candles are Darabonon, Shabbos candles are Darabonon, Shabbos candles are Tadir, Hanukkah candles are Eid Tadir, Tadir Vashem Tadir. That makes sense. But Kiddush could be Doraita. It depends. If you do Kiddush in Shul, then the Kiddush and wine will only be Darabonon. But if you didn't do Kiddush in Shul, then Kiddush can be Doraita. I mean, even if it's not Doraita always, but it has the potential for Doraita. It's strange that the Rambam paskens, based on the Gemara, that why would Shabbos candles come first? Shalom bais. The Gemara says, Mipnei HaShalom. Then the Gemara goes on to, and the Rambam as well, which is, you know, not atypical, he does it occasionally, but it's not what his purpose of his book is. He goes into a Musashmus. Gadol HaShalom, that even Hashem's name, in Mesechet Sota, even Hashem's name is erased for Shalom. The Rambam continues there. He doesn't just say the halacha. He wants to emphasize this point. Shalom seems to be our end goal. And we spoke about this at a different point outside when we had Bayacham outside about a couple of months ago, last month. And we also spoke about it very recently in Musa Seder. And I want to elaborate on this topic for a minute about what shalom is. Because this is the essence of why we were created. This is the whole essence of what we are as Jews. And it's expressed in many areas, but in Shalom Bayit is the primary area where it's expressed. What does Shalom actually mean? When I learned with Chassanim, I used to teach Shalom Bayit. Then I saw it doesn't work as well. Because every family, every couple have different topics which are trigger points by them. And if you know, if you're giving over your mahalach, it may or may not resound with them what you need to say. It could be that's totally not an issue for them and other points are an issue. And it's much better to hone in on what's specifically relevant to them. So I started doing the other way around. I started saying to the chatanim that I learned with, tell me points that have come up in your dating or in being engaged, which you think could have been, I don't want to say that went wrong, I say that you think could have been handled better. And bring those up now, because it's likely that those will be a similar model to what will happen later in different formats, in different ways, but it's likely. So inevitably, whatever this particular story is, a story comes out where he thought of a very logical way to do something, and she thought of a totally ridiculous way of doing something. And he doesn't know what to do, because the boys that came home are not very machabed. They're not going to like rebuke or shout or anything like that. Chas v'shalom. So he just wasn't sure what to do about it. Sometimes he was a bit more forceful and said, we're going to do it this way. Sometimes he was more easygoing and he said, okay, we'll do it your way. But then he felt like regret afterwards of saying that. Like he could have been done better. I mean, there was a better way to do it. And then he felt like a bitterness towards her or resentment towards her that they did it that way. So even when he's like being subtle, and sorry, he's being gentle, he still, it doesn't resound with him. Because there is a more effective way of doing things. I mean, that's a rule, yeah? The man's way is more effective. So that's what all the chatanim tell me. I never hear from the kallah. So this is a great opportunity to say a major principle of sharing an idea, which can be a real key in solving shalom bayit issues in general, but also to understanding why there's an inherent built-in difference. You see, people work with values, and when a woman comes with a value of, let's say, aesthetics, just as an example, right? And therefore, it doesn't matter if we're late. It has to look perfect when we go out, right? And he comes with the value of, let's say, integrity, where it's, if we said we're going to come at a certain time, then we should be there on time. That's just an example. It may come up in your marriages, it may not, but you could appreciate that example, right? So now, it's really value versus value, right? Aesthetics versus integrity. And whatever those two values are, all topics of Shalom Bayit will usually boil down to a real value versus a real value. It's very rare that people are so petty, they argue just for the sake of arguing. What usually happens, if that does happen, is that they started with values, and then it deteriorated until it gets to a point of just to be petty, just to argue for the sake of arguing. But it rarely starts with that. It usually will start with, she has an authentic real value that she holds highly, he has another one, and now it's just really a question of which value comes first. I had an amazing conversation with a couple recently. A Bulgarian Karen Biavino, who actually didn't teach as a chassan, but he calls me with his wife from time to time. And we do a Zoom call, him and her, and we talk it through. An amazing conversation. I was so amazed by it. Where they were so aware of this concept that what happened was they both expressed each other's value. I was blown away. She said, can I say your point? I said, go ahead. I mean, she said to me, can I say his point? I said, go ahead. And then she said what's important to him and why it's important to him and how she respects that value. Right? In this particular case, it was a value of family versus work. That was the debate they were having. So that was the two values that were aimed at each other. Now, they had the solution. They had shalom bayit. Because they didn't look at it as me versus her. That's a problem when you do that. They looked at it as one value versus another value. And which value should take precedence in this case? Because what often happens in marriages, he will align himself with a particular value, which he holds highly. She will align herself with a particular value. And those values conflict. In my last thought, they conflict. Right? Just think of a very easy example out of the context. If you have, let's say, an yeshiva, you have someone who's in charge of the money and someone who else is in charge of the chinuch. So there's always going to be a built-in conflict. It's going to be built-in. The person in charge, right, so let's say David Kahanchi wants to do lots of programming for Karen Biavne. And there's someone else who sits in a round building who sees the bills, right? So now, it's not about David versus whoever's in the round building. It's not about that. It's about, there's a value here. In fact, if it would be that David would be put in charge of the accounts and someone else would be put in charge of programming, then they would have the exact same argument the other way around. Right? It may not happen if you've been in this role for a long time and then you've like seen both sides. Right? But if you were initially placed in that role, because it's not about you versus someone else. It's about there's a conflict in the roles. You hear the point? Now what often happens is, and this is where it goes wrong, is where he aligns himself with a particular value, which obviously is the one that resounds with him. It's random, right? And she is aligning herself with a value which resounds with her, and they start fighting. And they obviously each have a very strong standpoint because it's a real value, it's a true point. And they start fighting. And then it all goes wrong. What's the solution? What is shalom bite? How do you have shalom? In this call that this couple called me with, what was amazing was that they took themselves out of it totally. They said, there's the value of the family, there's the value of the work. In their particular case, it conflicted. Because they had to move somewhere for work, and then it would be not being with family. That was their decision they had to make. And they were both saying, we both want what's good. We both see the value of family, even though really it was really for one side of them. And they both saw the value of work, even though it was helping the other side. Right? Really, like, you know, work aligned with him and family aligned with her, totally. Right? But they both saw the value in each side. And they were coming and they were saying, we want to know what to do and we need guidance in how to like work out this decision. But they didn't see it as against each other. In fact, the opposite. They were willing to say the other one's point of view. They didn't want it to get in the way. Hashem is one. We're getting a little philosophical now. Hashem is one. And Hashem, when he put us in the world, he put us in the world in a divided way. And the role that we have in this world, in every level, but in Shana Bias it's primary, is in order to take conflict, to take division, and to see how it's won. And to unite all the conflict that ever exists ever in the world. When Hashem designed man and woman, he designed them as complementary so long as they're aware of this concept. But if they're not aware of this concept, there'll be conflict. That's what Chazal say, Ezer Kenegdo. Because it's an Ezer if you're working together. If you're able to see each other as on the same team, working towards harmony. But if not, it's Kenegdo. And you'll always know in marriage where you are holding. Whether you're working together or whether she will show you that you're not doing your job properly. Because she'll be upset. She may show you in an aggressive way, by shouting. She may show you in a very passive way, but they're just shutting down. They're just like stopping to relate well. But either way, it's connected. She is the mirror for you to see, are you in harmony? And the goal of every relationship and every role is always to be finding the point of connection where everything can work together. And that's bringing Achdut Hashem to the world. You won't find that in the books. You'll find in the book solutions of how to listen to her well, how to give empathy, which is how to do it. It's how to become one. How to genuinely and authentically tune in to each other. You'll find those, but not why. So when I speak to the Chassanim, I say, if your goal in marriage is to prove your value as right, you're going to have a lifetime of conflict. Because every decision is always going to be a real value against a real value. But if you say, and this is a mistake, okay, I'm always going to give in, and then there'll be shalom bias, that's not harmony either. It probably won't last. It probably won't last. At a certain point, you know, it builds and builds and builds, and then you know, a person just shouts out, how many times can I be mevatel to you already? I've given in to you so many times. Why can't I get my way once, twice? It probably won't last. But even if it does last, even if a person is able to be mevater, and I'm just adding in brackets here, you do hear advice like this, be mevater, it's not healthy. It's not healthy. It springs back. But then you're in a conflict. What's supposed to do? Should I impose my view? Or should I give in to her view? Right? What do I do now? But that's only if you see the values as conflicted. But there's a higher value, a value of peace. Gadol HaShalom doesn't just mean that it's worthwhile being mevater. When the Rambam says Gadol HaShalom, he means shalom is your ultimate value. Let us say this so clearly. Whatever value you have, it's a true value. And you shouldn't be mevater on it. But what do you do when you have a decision between two things? Do you say that value is worthless because there's other value? You don't do that. You say both values have a lot of importance, but I have to choose one. Which am I going to choose? So going back to the case of integrity versus appearance, aesthetics, right? That if you say integrity is important, You're going to fight out your side. And even if you're mavata, you're going to be bitter towards her that you were late. But if you say, integrity is important, I'm not cancelling that in any form. And if you would ask me, and it would be an inner choice within myself, I would put integrity above appearance. But what's more important to me than integrity is shalom. That's more important to me. I'm not being mevater. I'm choosing. Do you hear the difference? If it's integrity is cancelled by appearance, then you've lost. And you gave in. And you're mevater. And you feel bitter. But if it's that you chose shalom over integrity, which was a choice within you, to your choice. You can choose to have a harmony, or you could choose to be bitter and upset and hold on to integrity. Then you won't feel bitter at all. You'll feel, I made a good choice. I chose shalom. And that's the purpose of marriage. The purpose of marriage is finding the place where two opposites can interact and you choose harmony. It's not that you're being mevater. You're not cancelling your view. You're choosing harmony. Now, within choosing harmony, sometimes she'll win, sometimes you'll win. There'll be a difference back and forth. But you'll always be choosing the path that leads to the harmony best way. And like we mentioned earlier, the more you show her that you care, the more she'll be willing to come towards you. I'll tell one more story and then I'll take questions. One of the rebbeim that I learned by, Rabbi Shochetovitz, he was related to and close with Rabbi Shach. And when he got married, Rabbi Shach said to him, what are you going to do when your wife opens the closet and says, Moshe Aaron, I've got nothing to wear. And you say, 1 minute, I'm looking at the same closet as you. You have 12 dresses. 1, 2, 3, 4. What do you mean you have nothing to wear? That's what he said he's going to do. But he was clever, so he knew that Rav Shach probably had better advice for him. So he said it like this. He said, I probably would say that, but I'm interested to hear what the Rav has to say. So Rav Shach said, this is what you do. You say, you have nothing to wear. Let's go. And you go with her, not into the shop. You go with her to the shop. And you say, I want you to buy 2 dresses. 2. And she'll say, no, 1's enough. But no, if you feel you have nothing to wear, buy 2. She says, you know, I could wear that one. Okay, but when you want to buy 2. Now, it sounds like it's a trick, but it's not. It's tuning into the authentic need. She's not saying, I have nothing to wear. That's not what she's saying. She obviously has what to wear. She can see it in front of her eyes. What was she saying when I said, I have nothing to wear? She's saying, and this is like hard to hear, but she's saying, I don't feel that you care about my appearance, or I don't feel you care about giving me what I need. That's what she's really saying, because she has what to wear. But her words are tuning into your relationship. She's asking for attention. And she's asking for care. She's asking for you to see if you're going to share with her. If you answer her in your way, the male logical solution way, what do you mean you have? Then you're harming her. You're even abusing her. Because she's calling out to you for care. And instead of giving her care, you're giving her the exact opposite. And what's that going to cause her to do? It's going to cause her to feel that you don't care about her. And then she'll have a need to buy more and more and more and more things. Because to prove that you really care. But if you show her that you do care, and you're willing to come towards her, and every time she has a need, then her needs will go down. Now, I'm not saying to do this just to, you know, save money. But it's authentic. It's really what her inner need is. And the goal of Shalom Bayit is to take two opposites and understand deeply what the other one's need is. You're coming from a male perspective, and she's coming from a female perspective. And as you give her your male perspective to the degree that she's open to it, and you hear out her female perspective, it won't make you feminine, but it will make you expanded. You'll be able to hear things in a deeper measure than you ever were. And like we've always spoken about, the goal is not the one extreme, and it goes on the other extreme. The goal is that space in the middle that exists, which is the Adam HaShalem. Ish belo isha, eino ish. The Gemara says in the Yavamas. What do you mean, you're not an ish? I'm an ish, I don't need her. I can be very, very independent. I was independent until I got married. What do I need her for? There's somewhere in the middle, which is the Adam. Adam is the man and the woman together. As you interact and you understand her perspective and you tune into her way of thinking, you become expanded and she becomes expanded. And you reach a point, which is always growing, but you reach a point where instead of thinking independent, meaning from your own perspective, you think from a perspective of taking both you and her into account together. And then you become an Adam Shalem, and that's the goal. The goal is always to take one extreme, the other extreme, and find the balance in the middle, which is the fullness, the wholeness. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make man and woman separate? In order that we'll be in a world of division and learn how to make harmony out of that world. And that's Achdut Hashem. That's what Achdut Hashem is. It's taking all the many divisions that exist in the world and finding where they can coexist. That's a hard word because, you know, a non-Jewish translation of shalom is not fighting. That's what it is. We want the Jews and the Palestinians to be able to live side by side, coexist. That doesn't mean they're friends. It doesn't mean that they have harmony and they function together. And it means that they're not fighting. The non-Jewish definition of peace is not fighting. That type of a relationship is like a business partnership. Can you take out the rubbish today? I'll take it out tomorrow. If you can pick up the kids on Wednesday, I'm available on Thursday. And you live side by side. Do you have shalom bias? We never fight. I didn't ask if you never fight. Do you have shalom bias? Well, yeah, we never fight. That's not shalom bias. Do you understand each other? Makashir. What's I got to do with it? We never fight. We have a good system that works out. I'm in the house from Sunday to Wednesday, and she's in the house from Now we never fight. We don't see each other. The house is functioning very well. And there's no conflict. Shalom, from a Torah perspective, Gadol HaShalom, is that it's the higher value that we're working towards. We look at Hashem's name is Shalom. It's the higher value we're working towards. All the goal of all the techniques of Shalom Bayit are all aimed towards the same principle of getting to a place where you exist as one, where you've tuned into her way of thinking, that you think in a way which is both your way and her way together. Now obviously you'll always have your perspective, but as you're able to like have learned to take in her perspective into account, you become an expanded individual. And that's the whole reason why Hashem made us. You use that same model on how to relate to other people, on how to relate to your children, on how to resolve a machlokas in the Gemara. It's all the same underlying goal. It's taking the world from a place of division to a place of harmony. Tumah is where the soul and the body separate. Where there's division, there's tumah. Kedusha is where everything works in harmony with this function. That's why the Kodesh Kedoshim has the image of a male and a female together with the Kedusha. Because when a man and a woman are able to function in harmony, then they have Kedusha. So two major points that I wanted to say was, point number one is there are many valuable guidelines and advice out there which describe how to communicate effectively, how to have empathy and understand the other person's perspective. I gave a couple, two secular books which are worth reading, Men from Mars and also Five Languages. As well as that, there's a website, Torah Anytime, which has a series of lectures. I don't remember his name, but it's very popular there. You can look it up. Just look for Shalom Bayis there. It will jump up. Short, informative, clear. And it's a sugya that one has to learn and invest in. That was the first major topic. We gave some guidelines within that, but it's a sugya one has to invest in. That's point number one. Point number two was Gadol HaShalom. That it's not a mistake in Hashem's design that he made man and woman so different. Rather, he purposely made them opposing, with the goal being that as you learn the other one's way, you tune into them, you'll always find conflict, constantly find conflict. And as you're able to rise above the conflict, not by giving in and not by imposing your view, but by choosing shalom, choosing for there always to be peace, you'll be causing the shechina. And the famous Gemara, right? Ish v'isha zachu shechina b'nehem. What does that mean? There's a place in between a man and a woman, shechina b'nehem. There's a place in between a man and a woman, which is the Adam HaShalem, which is where you've absorbed both the man and the woman perspective, which is where there's a harmony in the home, where you've chosen shalom as your guiding factor. And that's where the Shekhinah then is able to draw down, because that's the Achdut, which is the whole purpose of it. Yeah, question?
In a case of a conflict of interest, where you choose shalom over your own value, is it important that it's known to her that you chose shalom, or is it enough to assume that you're on the path?
In a healthy marriage, like that story of the couple that I told you, you'll express both views. Wow, that was dramatic. Are you okay, Zaka?
I'm fine.
Great. And why you Torah will be recorded eternally. Just take the couch, it's all yours. If it's at a point, I'm just adding, if it's at a point of tension, right, there's tension there, and you're saying it in order to prove that, like, you should know that I had my view over here, but I'm going towards you. Remember that. Yeah, so then it's unhealthy. But if it's in a healthy relationship, like this couple, then you'll be able to openly say how you'll say to her, I totally hear your side. Your need is, etc. And you check with her. Is that right? Did I get it? Did I understand you well? Check in with her. Is that what you were saying? And when she says yes, then you say, I also want to share my perspective. And then you openly share. Once you've heard her perspective and confirmed with her that is her perspective, then you're allowed to say you're allowed. You know, it'll be valuable to say your view as well. Say, I wanted to say my point. This is where I'm coming from. And you can ask her, does that make sense? And she may say no, and then you try and explain it again, not for her to agree with you. I mean, not for her to give in to you, but just like to be together. Because the whole goal here is, if you're working together on this story, if you both understand this concept, the goal is to both understand each other, to have mutual respect and understanding. And then when it comes to making a decision, you make a decision which is whatever's going to cause the most peace, and you look together about what's going to cause peace. You can certainly take guidance from other people. You can say, let's together ask a rabbi. It's very valuable having a mutual person that you both agree to discuss with major decisions, not minor decisions, but major decisions, where you're able to come, like this boy does with me, but you can take, you know, real people and like check in with them. Check in with them and say, this is our point of view. You can, like, these couples are beautiful, you can each say each other's perspective, right? To really share the view. And then say, well, do whatever he says. That it's especially valuable on monetary topics. Money can cause major machlokas when there isn't enough, and then there's decisions have to be made either or. And it's unfortunate that happens. It doesn't have to happen, but it often does happen when they don't know how to handle money properly or don't have to discuss money properly. And by having some third party, which when we have big decisions to make, we're going to discuss it with them, it can often just eradicate. We both agree that we understand each other's perspective, so it is valuable as long as it's not being used as a point of tension. Does that make sense? Any other questions or insights?
Yeah. For a lot of the things in the books, I'm guessing there's a lot of observations of things which aren't completely rational for both sides. So if both parties read the book and become experts on it, and all the sort of values become, all the rationality is added back into it, don't a lot of things sort of get taken away, and then it's just become some sort of, anyway, becomes some sort of business at the end of it? It's like you're saying it because that's your place point of view, and I'm saying it was my point of view. And then it just sounds like the, you know, sounds like a Wednesday thing again.
So what happens is that it becomes amusing. She'll say, that is so typical that you would say that. What, like you're scripted? You're scripted in this way. Like it's what the book says. And you laugh about it together. And it becomes quite enjoyable. Because you're understanding, it's not about me versus you. It's about, this is a male way of thinking versus a female way of thinking. And then you work out together. Well, in this particular situation, does the male perspective make more sense? Or does the female perspective make more sense? Or the male one makes more sense, but anyway, we're looking for peace, so we'll do what you want to say. And you don't rub it in afterwards. You don't say, you see, if you would have listened to me, then you don't say, I told you, don't do that. Rather, the goal is peace. So it does become amusing as you see yourselves scripted in certain books, but it's valuable because then you're really in more deeply understanding. The ultimate goal is that she'll fully understand your perspective and you'll fully understand hers. So it's very valuable when she understands fully where you're coming from. When she can predict what you would say, and you could do what she would say, then you're in a very healthy place of seeing the full picture. And you yourself, even before you discuss it with her, will take both into account. And you'll come to an understanding decision where often, for certain situations, like often of dealing with children, her perspective is probably more valuable. And when it comes to, you know, how to build something, then your perspective is often more valuable. But sometimes it's surprisingly the other way around. Right? So you'll learn how to have the full perspective by having that harmony. So it does become sometimes like amusing in that way that you're able to predict what I'm going to say. That's a great sign. It works very well when you're at that stage. Any other insights, perspectives?
What if she says yes to the two dresses?
Yeah, it's a real thing. You have to be very willing. That means it's such a need for her that she wants to like see, do you really care? And then you certainly see it through. It wasn't a trick. It was authentic. It may work out that she says no. But the more you give her what she needs, the less she'll have to prove herself that she's worthy. And the more you give it to her authentically, the more she'll see that I don't even need to demand it anymore. Together with the language of love, that you make sure you say it in a way that she's fully able to hear. Yeah, Zaka.
I've been mentioning a few times that your first guest and you never have the reciprocal.
Start again.
You mentioned a few times the idea of her testing you or trying to, see if you love her. Do you ever find the opposite?
So all the idea of testing, she doesn't do consciously. It's not a conscious thing that she does. She's not thinking. Like an example that I gave beforehand of where she tells a very, very long story before getting to the point. She doesn't do that knowingly that it's annoying you and she wants to annoy you. She just has a need. And her need is to see that you really care and you can give her affection and attention. That's a deep need that she has. So a man always does, a man who has a need will do it to a woman as well. Equally, when he feels his need is not being addressed, he'll have the same buildup depending on what his need is, whatever his language of love is. If he feels that she doesn't care about him in a particular way, right? Whether it's quality time or whether it's giving him something, he'll probably feel hurt to some degree on some level. And if he feels that she's not respecting him in what he does, that's usually more of a common one. Like he's working or he's learning and whatever he's doing and she doesn't honor him for what he's doing, then he'll try and prove to her how honorable he is. He'll say, do you know what I did today? I did this. And you know what someone said about me? They said this. And he's testing her to see, does she respond in kind? Does she say, wow, you're amazing? Or does she put him down? And say, yeah, well, what are you trying to prove? He'll test her as well, equally, if he has a need which he feels is not being addressed. And if she's sensitive to his need, which in that case is like words of praise, right, within the five languages, and then she says to him, how was your learning today? What did the Rosh Kollel say about you? what did your boss say about you? And then and he shyly says, oh yeah, he said that I said a good chiddush. He says, wow, you're amazing. And she does that. Then the man won't have a need to test her and prove himself to her. Because it's being addressed. So it does work both ways, but neither are conscious. Neither are thought out that a person is conscious of the fact they're doing that. Okay, those are just some initial guidelines. There's a lot, obviously. There's so much more. But just the fact, as I said last time as well, with the Shidduchim, just the fact that this sugya is a sugya, and that you're aware of the concept, and the need to invest in it, point number one, as well as understanding that it's a lachatchila, the way that it's planned and designed, it's not a bidyevet. Don't get frustrated with your wife for being a woman. Recognize this is Hashem's plan and Hashem's design for you each to perfect yourself, for you to each come to a place where you are able to have harmony and bring the Shekhinah down. That's the lachatchila plan of everything in the world, but this is the primary place where it takes place. You view marriage totally different. You view it as another opportunity for growth. Instead of it being frustrating, it's more opportunities for coming close to her and thereby coming close to Hashem. And thereby you're constantly growing. It takes away all the frustration and it becomes one of joy and satisfaction as you learn her more deeply and you're able to have more harmony. And the more difficult the situation is, but you're still able to have harmony even in that situation, the more satisfaction you feel. Okay, even that very challenging one, we were able to find a way to make peace and harmony in the firm. It's a great satisfaction you're able to do that because you see it as your joint mission together. And that's the secret of shalom. Gedol ha-shalom, says the Rambam, and he goes on at length to teach you that that's the highest value and the major principle why we get married. Yisher koach. Thank you for listening.